Fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can respond to your leads in 15 seconds or less and help you book test drives 24/7, nights and weekends, so you can sell more cars. Podium's AI BDC is a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night and sounds like your best sales rep. Transform potential interest into sales today with Podium. Visit podium.com/daily drive. That's podium.com/daily drive.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/daily drive promo to redeem. Welcome to this weekend drive edition of Daily Drive for the third week in April 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today we're breaking down some of the biggest stories in the auto industry from the past week and looking forward to what's in store in the days ahead. Today on the show, the 2024 Automotive News PACE Awards finalists shine light on some of the most important innovations emerging in the auto industry.
This is something we never would have heard much about 5 years ago. This whole new phenomenon is elbowing its way into R&D centers.
Our own Lindsay Chappell joins the show in a few minutes. But first, Jamie, I missed you all week. Glad to have you back.
Glad to be back, Kel.
A lot of news this week. Let's get started. So it's been a very interesting week for Tesla. It plans to cut more than 10% of its global workforce. They cut the price of their full self-driving subscriptions in half. There's been Cybertruck recalls due to an accelerator pedal cover. While all this is happening, the company is asking shareholders to vote on CEO Elon Musk's $56 billion compensation package. That is with a B. With all the losses it seems like Tesla is taking, why do they think it's okay to compensate Elon $56 billion while the stock price drops and people lose jobs?
The timing is bad, and certainly the optics of it are bad. But the way it was set up and the reason they tried to pay him that much in stock options to begin with was because he made it into a $1 trillion company. I mean, it became one of the most valuable companies in the world. And so those stockholders who rode along were like, yeah, we'll give you all these options. Look, it's a large number. It's an offensive number to a lot of people, or just straight up obscene, right? And, but even when they came out, when he first proposed or when they first approved that pay package, I remember, reading it and just laughing at it. Like, there's no way that this company is going to grow that big, that its market cap is going to get that huge. And it just defied all expectations. And there's a certain element, it's an extreme, Silicon Valley type of case where, you say, okay, we want the CEO's compensation to be aligned with shareholder interests. If he can keep growing the company, growing the revenue, growing the market cap, then we want to reward him. But man, they really got themselves into some astronomical numbers, and it got thrown out by a judge. So now the chairperson wants to take it back to the shareholders and have them approve it again and start the fight all over. We'll see where it turns out, but the optics are not great.
I mean, it's $56 billion, Jamie. I mean, that you said an offensive number. That is a disrespectful number. I mean, shareholders were complaining, earlier this week or last week about Carlos Tavares's pay package, which was like, $22 million?
$22 million, yeah. And so this is, 2,500 times that. So it's a big number.
See, like, all you could do is just laugh at it because it's just so absurd. Also, speaking of Stellantis, Stellantis avoided plant closures this week, and its attorney said it did so, quote, under hostage threat. The automaker made a $100,000 payment to a supplier that threatened to stop shipping parts due to a cost dispute. Should this put automakers on alert, Jamie? I mean, if one supplier can do this, why couldn't another? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's always an option, but it's a really provocative, combative way to try to resolve the situation. The suppliers are under a lot of pressure. The pandemic was really hard on them, the reduced volumes, the inconsistent production schedules. And then, of course, they were the first part of the funnel to face the higher cost problems of everything, the price of everything going up. So they've been really squeezed. And when companies feel that sort of pressure, they're likely to take the most extreme measures if they have to. Generally, they don't want to do it. They have dozens and dozens of contracts. When you do something like withhold parts or threaten to withhold parts, it creates bad feelings. Stellantis is very upset about this, obviously, by the pejorative language they're using now. And it can really make it difficult to get new contracts, right? After another 3 to 5 years, those vehicles are going to get redesigned. And unless you have a completely unique part, you're not going to be on the next program. So, it's an extreme measure, kind of like a strike, but a strike where the company could just move the plant to in some place with a new workforce because they don't have to keep doing business with you. So I don't think this is going to be a trend, but it certainly shows the pressure they're under, and it could happen at other places.
Well, it just seems like the last year, maybe even 2 years, it's just been really, really tough in the supplier world. I feel like we could possibly see this happen with another supplier. I mean, if their hands are tied too tight, right?
Yeah, it could happen. I've been doing this so long, but it used to be back in the old days, like, this century, the 2000s, 2010s and all that, suppliers typically made, 50% to 100% higher profit margins than automakers did. They could be more selective about their contracts. They didn't have the same types of overhead and liabilities that automakers did. And the pandemic really switched that. Automakers made a killing. Suppliers really got beat up. And yeah, some of them are going to be in tough shape and might need to turn to extreme measures.
Gotcha. Well, Jamie, we have an email from Stephen Thompson, who I want to say is now a UAW believer. His email says, I was unsure how I felt about the UAW's attempt to unionize the Chattanooga Volkswagen plant until I listened to your interview. It was with our own Michael Martinez and Sean Fain. He said, I found his tactics and rhetoric during the Detroit 3 negotiations to be abrasive and combative, and was worried his organizing the Southern transplants would be nasty and destabilizing, until I heard him make an impassioned and very rational argument that I fully agree with on your podcast. He came across as intelligent, articulate, and a person who genuinely cares about his members. I now hope the UAW wins the South, and that our country as a whole will be better because of it. Stephen Thompson, Arnold, Missouri. I hear what he's saying here, Jamie. I mean, as myself as an outsider, when I first saw Sean Fain come onto the scene, he just seemed like this very, very angry, ticked off guy. But you have to think about it. It's like, well, he needs to speak to his audience, right? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said a lot last year during the talks, trying to explain the fiery rhetoric and the combative way he went into the negotiations. I mean, this guy barely got elected. Very few people voted. He had, no base, no machine, and no mandate. And he had to, try to win a good contract. Well, since then, right, he won a good contract. So he's coming from more of a position of strength. He's built his machine. He's consolidated his base. And, maybe this is a self-appointed mandate, but it's absolutely a popular mission. And if he can pull it off, I mean, by now people will know. We're recording this on Friday. We should get the results late Friday. So, check autonews.com if you need to find out if the UAW won in Chattanooga. But he's coming at it from a position of much greater strength. And also, it's just a different job, right? Organizing is not the same as negotiating. And we'll see, if they won this vote, the next thing he's going to turn to is trying to get a contract in Chattanooga. And we might see the fire and brimstone version of Sean Fain again real soon there.
I mean, when I first saw Sean Fain, I wasn't too sure about him because he was just so aggressive, but he seems like he's like a likable person. He told his own life story about how, he was on public assistance and how he was struggling to buy diapers for his kids. And so, you can't help but admire someone like that.
I've lived, I've been on unemployment. I've been on government aid to get formula and diapers for my firstborn child. I don't forget those things. I don't want working class people to have to struggle like I did.
But I'm really interested to see how the vote lands in Chattanooga. Coming up, our own Lindsay Chappell walks us through some of the biggest trends in this year's Automotive News PACE Awards finalists. That's next on Weekend Drive.
Fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can help you respond to all your leads in 15 seconds or less, 24/7, nights and weekends. Check out Podium's AI BDC, a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night with human-like communication. Your response time to leads is crucial. With your new AI BDC, you'll engage with leads fast, increasing the chance of selling a car to 45%. Customize your AI BDC to what your dealership needs and start booking more test drives. Sell 10 to 15 more cars per month by connecting quickly with leads over text. Visit podium.com/dailydrive. Again, that is podium.com/dailydrive.
Welcome back to Weekend Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. We're about to announce this year's finalists for the Automotive News PACE Awards, which celebrate innovations in the auto industry. It's the 29th year for the awards. Joining us now to talk about the program and what it represents in the auto industry in 2024 is Automotive News Senior Editor Lindsay Chappell. Lindsay Chappell, welcome to Weekend Drive.
Hey, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Hey, you know, it's springtime. Baseball season has started. It stopped snowing in Michigan. Is there a sign of spring for Tennessee? Do you have a certain special kind of tree that flowers this time of year?
We do. We do. We've got red buds, which are actually purple. I never knew how come they're called red buds. The landscape lights up in purple. And then, of course, April in Tennessee is what we affectionately call tornado weather, which is when I was a kid. This is when they always broadcast The Wizard of Oz, because you knew there was a tornado imminent, and then it was in the movie. So that's life in April.
Well, life in April, and it also means that it's time for the PACE Awards.
PACE Awards, yep.
This tradition is back in the spring, the PACE Awards, when we honor, you know, great breakthroughs in automotive technology. Of course, to be a PACE Award winner, the innovation has to go into production or at least be under contract. I believe that's correct. And then we also have the PACE pilots, which is for things that are not yet sold to anybody, but that the judges believe have a lot of promise, have a lot of prospect to them.
I never envy the judges having to sort through these things to determine which is a finalist, for example, for a PACE pilot, because there is so much stuff going on and so many breakthroughs. And you know, I mean, we can look back through, this is our 29th year for the Automotive News PACE Award. And you look back at things that we highlighted, you know, 2003, and you're going, holy smokes, that's on every car in the United States now. and it's still happening. There are things in just the PACE pilot that haven't even reached the commercial market that you're going, holy smoke, who thought of that? But yeah, a lot of stuff gurgling to the surface.
Well, you mentioned the judges, and of course, this is one of the contests that the editorial department of Automotive News does not judge. We have professionals for that, veteran engineers and executives who I think they pretty much volunteer their time, you know, and their expertise to really protect the integrity of the program, you know, that they really know what is new and what is moving the needle. And they spend hours and hours, you know, really prosecuting all of these nominees to decide the finalists. It's a, you know, it's really exciting in the, just the sincerity and the involvement of these experts really gives it so much credibility. And I'm so proud that we have it as a part of our corporate brand, part of our Automotive News brand.
Yeah. It was brilliant on the part of our predecessors to realize that this is not something that we should be deciding as editors and reporters of the news, that this is something that needs to be in a safe space, independent of us, independent of our thoughts, that the judges can pursue these things without any interference or without any involvement of other people. There are 23 judges, and they have a very strict process they go through to determine who the finalists are. They make site visits, which blows my mind. They actually go to the site and see it with their own eyes, and they look at the meaningfulness of the innovation that's being proposed and the viability of it. As you said, the main PACE award goes to innovations that aren't just drawings in an engineering room. They have made it into the commercial market. I always feel like, you know, we can cavil about the work that the judges do, because they go through it all and they hand it off to us and we print it in the paper, and we will soon say who the winners of this thing will be.
So the finalists are getting announced basically in Monday's paper, or maybe that'll be online for certain subscribers on Sunday. The winners will be announced on Monday, April 29th. We have a nice event at the Max M. Fisher Music Theater in downtown Detroit. You know, you wrote in the Intersection column for this weekend that, you know, people might have thought, you know, it was pretty hard to do new stuff during the pandemic. And of course, these are all innovations that take years of development. And yet they just keep coming. These companies, these engineers just keep finding new ways to make automobiles better.
Yeah. You know, I think Pricewaterhouse recently pointed out that at the time of the pandemic, we're saying, why are we still talking about the pandemic? Thank God that's past us. But there's a pipeline. There's a time phenomenon in the auto industry. You don't just make changes and come out with them next week. You know, the changes that we see right now started years ago. And that's the same with component manufacturing and systems manufacturing and the development work and R&D. The work that went into some of the things that we're seeing emerge on the marketplace right now, you know, we're timed to start, you know, right around March 2020 during the blackout period. Back then, you know, we were wondering, I remember you talking about it. It's like, well, what kind of gap in the pipeline is this going to create? Are we going to get to 2024 and there's going to be no new cars that will just be driving around in used cars and last year's models? But the work kept going on. I mean, we wrote about it at the time, how engineers were working at their dining room table. You know, they were figuring out how to, you know, communicate between, you know, an engineering office in Michigan and an engineering office in Germany, you know, by Zoom, this whole new thing of Zoom. They got it done, so that today it's like none of that stuff ever happened. That there is still just it's like an oil well in Oklahoma. I mean, the innovations just keep coming out of the ground. It's really a marvelous thing to witness.
Out of those innovations, were there any trends that sort of popped out to you? Of course, I mean, we don't know who the winners are going to be, but among the finalists, was there a trend you could identify?
I'm noticing the trend, and which says to me that the judges must surely also be noticing the trend. You know, we have 23 judges, and they sift through so many things. But what I'm seeing among the finalists is a new era of electronics. And you say, okay, well, we've had electronics in the auto industry for 100 years, maybe 80 years. Things are becoming really complex. And the secret sauce in so many instances is how a software system works, how a software system is integrated into an automaker's engineering operations to facilitate software-defined vehicles. You can go back a couple of years and do a phrase search for software-defined vehicles, and you'll see very few mentions of it in public. And it's increasingly become a cornerstone of how cars are developed, how cars will operate, how cars are already behaving on the roads. And there is a host of technologies that are being innovated to support that stuff. You know, this is something we would never have heard about a decade ago. This is something we never would have heard much about 5 years ago. It's not overtaking all the other innovations that's going on. People are still innovating the weight of metal brackets. Those innovations are hugely critical going forward. Lightweighting remains a really important part of automotive work. I'm just saying that this whole new phenomenon is elbowing its way into R&D centers.
Well, what stands out to me, you know, is the overlapping or the intertwining of all those electronics with, of course, the electrification of the vehicle, which continues even as we see greater emphasis on hybrids. That's still electrification. Lightweighting comes into helping those vehicles go farther, which is so important. And then we also, of course, we continue to see improvements, or at least a lot of companies. This is maybe less of a pace thing, but everybody's trying to work on better battery chemistries. And that's something that I know our team's been writing about. Nissan is getting close to starting some more mass-like production of solid-state batteries. And that is really seen by a lot of folks as a potential breakthrough technology that could make EVs more affordable and profitable if that manufacturing can be perfected.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mentioning the Nissan solid state, we have a story in this week's issue from Hans Greimel in Tokyo talking about Nissan moving forward on its solid state EV batteries. Now, you know, you can imagine a time in the 1800s where people were standing on the banks of the Missouri River to see the steamboat come by and, you know, cheering, and then the steamboat blows up and they go, well, that technology is not going to work. You know, where, you know, there's, you know, people bickering about whether it even needs to be pursued or not. We're kind of at that stage with electric vehicles in many ways. People are saying, well, it's a dead end and we shouldn't have gone that way, and we're going to slow down our programs and stuff. It's going to be just like innovations. It's going to be a pipeline that will continue. And in 4 years, you will see huge improvements and huge gains due to innovations in that realm. And what we saw with the just the example of the solid state EV batteries is you know we're hearing people standing on the shores of the Missouri River talking about how solid state batteries, you know, no, they got a long ways to go on that. There's, you know, that's off in the future. Well, you know, Nissan next March will have production equipment installed at its Yokohama plant to begin manufacturing pilot manufacturing of solid-state batteries. So, you know, inch by inch, this stuff is still coming, whether exciting people on the sales and marketing side of the equation or not.
Well, we'll be watching for those innovations to keep flowing, like the Missouri River and the Mississippi River, and making our vehicles better and safer and more efficient year after year. Lindsay Chappell, thank you so much for joining me this weekend on Weekend Drive.
Thank you, Jamie. Good talking to you.
That's all for this Weekend Drive edition of Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News executive producer Jake Neer for his help on today's podcast. You can get the latest news on new products, electrification, PACE Awards, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back on Monday for a conversation with Cornell University labor expert Arthur Wheaton about the results of last week's union vote at Volkswagen in Chattanooga. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. If you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.